Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday, December 14th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. I open the program with some comments about a strange political controversy happening not too far from us in Boston. Sacred Heart University political science scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, stopped by to chat with us about the national political scene, while the University of New Haven national security professor, Dr. Howard Stouffer, commented on the ongoing Israel-Hamas war.
So just when you thought, and just when, let's do it together, just when you and I thought that the left in this country couldn't get any more sacramentally obsessed with race, and just when you thought the progressive left in this country couldn't say anything that would further cause them to insert one or both feet in their collective mouths on race, they do it. And just when you think that just maybe the ridiculousness surrounding race and ethnicity and skin color, everything the left has always said we shouldn't pay attention to, we should have a colorblind society, just when you think that couldn't get more orgasmically entrenched in the minds of the left, it does. I saw this piece last night and I said, this has got to be satire. It's got to be from The Onion, although The Onion really is a left-leaning site now. They would never do anything on race anymore. Or more than likely, the Babylon Bee, which is marvelously funny on this stuff. So much to the fact that the Babylon Bee stuff is often shadow banned on Facebook and on Twitter because it hits a little too close to home. But I digress. I'm just going to read you one of the... Well, before I do... And I incorporate that into the headline. I'm going to read you a phrase that, unless you saw this story, I can guarantee that you've never heard before. Unless you hang out in Ivy League schools or on the Upper West Side of Manhattan or in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and float among the left. Here's a new phrase for you, and I guess it's okay to say, because the mayor of one of America's great cities, a city that I went to school in for 4 years and get back to every so often and really love, the mayor of Boston, Massachusetts, Michelle Wu, who was often celebrated because she's a woman, and of course, it's Michelle Wu, the first female mayor and multi-ethnic mayor of Boston, you got to put that in, because if you don't, you're a white colonizer. She has come up with the phrase. You ready for this? And I'm not making this up. This is, you'll get the story in a second, but this sounds like something out of Reconstruction. This sounds like something straight out of the post-Civil War era of America, 1866, 1867, when they were, again, building back a lot of the South and parts of the North that had been destroyed, Sherman burning everything, You ready for this? Three words, folks. Let it roll around in your mouth there. Electeds of color. Yes. We have a phrase now. In the American lexicon, apparently, electeds of color. I kid you not. Folks that have been duly elected in Boston, Massachusetts, that are multi-ethnic, are now referred to by a liberal mayor as electeds of color. What am I talking about here? Boston Mayor Michelle Wu defends an electeds of color holiday party after an invitation backlash. Folks, you cannot make this up. Settle in for this story. Again, this whole story, and I'll read you some paragraphs here. This whole thing reads like satire. Maybe it is. Maybe this is performance art. You tell me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And ask yourself, if this was a Republican mayor, and a Republican mayor did a holiday party for Caucasian electeds, which would be an abhorrent thing, what do you think the response would be, as well it should be, in a multi-ethnic, multiracial city like Boston? What do you think that would be? Can you imagine that? Electeds of color. That sounds like something that would come out of George Wallace's mouth in the 60s. I swear, if I'm governor of this state, we will never have any electeds of color here. And the crowd would go wild, and the Ku Klux Klan guys and gals would put on their hoods. But again, it's okay if a liberal woman says it. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu defended holding a holiday party for electeds of color just hours before hosting the controversial gathering inside the city's official reception hall on Wednesday. Now, listen to what they apologize for. They don't apologize here that maybe it was a little politically tone deaf to invite only electeds of color. I say. The only thing that they're going to apologize here for is that, folks, I kid you not, look the story up. The thing that they're apologizing for is that white people got the invitations. I'm not kidding here. The only thing they're apologizing for, where essentially they're saying, and I'll read you the quotes here, we're sorry if you got one of these invitations and you're white. Wu admitted it was a mistake that every member, it was a mistake. Ready for this? Michelle Wu, the mayor of Boston, says here in the New York Post, admitted it was a mistake that every member of the Boston City Council got invitations to the controversial holiday party and had already talked to those that were uninvited. Hey, mayor, great, I'll be there. Well, there's a problem. Well, what's the problem, mayor? You're white. Michelle Wu told reporters, here's a quote from the mayor of Boston, "We had individual conversations with everyone, so people understand it was truly just an honest mistake that went out in typing the email field." Wu, Boston's first female of color and Asian American mayor, any other hyphens we can put in there, came under fire when her director of city council relations, Denise Dos Santos, sent an exclusive party invitation to all members of the city council instead of just the selected invitees, which I guess they determined by melanin levels. Boston City Council is comprised of 6 minority and 7 white members. All of the white members had their invitations rescinded about 15 minutes after the original email was sent. Dos Santos wrote in her follow-up, quote, "I wanted to apologize for my previous email regarding a holiday party for tomorrow. I did send that to everyone by accident, and I apologize if my email may have offended or come across as so. Sorry for any confusion this may have caused." She's apologizing to white people that they shouldn't have been invited. Wu justified Wednesday's party, claiming it had become sort of a yearly custom over the past decade where members of the diverse group take turns hosting the party. I'm sorry, Mayor, you can't talk your way out of this. The mayor added there would be other gatherings for all elected officials to attend, saying, quote, "She looked forward to celebrating with everyone at the holiday parties that we have besides this one as well." Wu stressed that the errant invitations were not meant to cause any harm and that she wants to continue bringing together all the different backgrounds that work in the city. I can read some of these comments from people, but I won't. Wu added, I think we've all been in a position at one point where an email went out and it was a mistake in the recipient. She can't be serious with that. Well, I guess she is. She can't be serious. So she's apologizing for an email that, in a sense, says, yeah, you're invited. Oh, you're not because you're white. And by the way, she's trying to cover this up with, well, we have different holiday gatherings or different parties for different groups. And I asked my original question to my left-leaning friends out there. What is it with your side and race? Why can't everybody on the city council be invited to one big holiday party in Boston? Now, folks, I'm telling you, I read this last night. I said, please let this be satire. But it wasn't. So notice the apology from Michelle Wu, mayor of one of the great American cities. The apology is, hey, you white people, sorry you got invited. How embarrassing. How utterly embarrassing. And I'm just asking a simple question. Can you imagine if a white mayor said, hey, we're sorry to you black and Hispanic and Asian American and Islander American members of the city council. You shouldn't have got that invitation because this one we sent out, it was only for white people. We didn't mean to invite
electeds of color.
Oh, my God. Oh, it is. There is a sacramental level of the race issue among the left in this country that is, I don't know whether to laugh or cry anymore. I don't. But like I said, can you imagine if this was a Republican or an independent mayor, but because Michelle Wu, again, everybody, you can't not point this out. She's a woman and a minority. Nobody's going to do anything. Can you imagine if the shoe or shoes were on the other foot or feet? It is mind-numbing. What is it about the left's maniacal obsession with race? And you know what? If it comes out that other administrations did this with a white mayor or a Republican mayor, I'd fry him on that too. Ridiculous. You're doing holiday parties by ethnicity. Boy, the band sounds good, don't they? We make them rehearse in a garage and everything. You know, with a lead guitarist came to me the other day. He's like, we got to do something better. I was like, all right. All right, we'll get back to open phones momentarily. If you want to chime in, you can get in line at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We haven't talked to this gentleman recently. Like to have him on every so often to talk about things politically, locally, and especially nationally as well when things are going on. Some interesting things here. Joining us, Sacred Heart University Political Science scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, steps into the batter's box. Hey, Gary, it's Paul. How are you?
Yeah, how are you, Paul? Good to hear from you.
I'm good, Gary. Good to hear from you. Thanks for taking the time. It's been a while. You know, Gary, it looks like this gamble by Mike Johnson, the new House Speaker, recently installed, to push all his chips to the table and say, hey, no money for Ukraine, no money for Israel unless we clamp down on the border. It looks like he's going to get something pretty substantial here.
Yeah, from all indications, you know, the president and Democrats in the House are also willing now to negotiate what Speaker Johnson has put before them. And it does look as if a deal is in the works. And they'll probably get the money for Ukraine and Israel, and it looks like money for border security as well. So, Johnson, this could be a big victory for the Republicans in Johnson, quite frankly.
And if you've noticed, Gary, as I have, one of the guys out in front on this, Chris Murphy of Connecticut, junior senator, he's been on all the weekend talk shows. I look today again in Politico. He's featured there. So if anything, and he says they're starting to get specific on stuff, this could quite possibly add to his resume for future runs here.
Chris Murphy, sure. Future runs. It's interesting you mentioned that. And yes, he is going to be running again for the Senate. And I think, you know, when you talk about future runs, mm-hmm. I've always said that there's even a larger run in possibly in store for Chris Murphy. And that is beyond the Senate as well.
Yeah. And Gary, when you look at it, I mean, I'm not surprised that the White House said, OK, we may be open to this or that, you know, no matter what the far left of the president's party says. Because, you know, immigration is a big issue. His numbers are not great. There are people at the border saying this thing's out of control most days. So I guess, Gary, it does give the president a little camouflage here, saying, look, this is bad. We have to do something. And the Republicans are kind of forcing my hand here.
Yeah, the problem with that is, of course, he's pretty late to the game. You know, he's really been you know, delayed in his actions on a lot of issues, but he has been brought to the table on this issue, and it does appear as if the president is going to start to negotiate and, you know, make some deals with the Republicans. And as you mentioned, you know, the president is of course running for re-election, and his approval numbers are absolutely abysmal. And so this could only help him, I think, in the eyes of, you know, moderate voters, centrist voters who think, hey, you know, he's finally recognized that that the border is an issue. And so, yeah, I think that it could be a win-win, not just for the Republicans, as I mentioned, but it could be a win as well for Biden, too.
Where do you stand, Gary Rose, in what Democratic camp? Hey, there's plenty of time. Don't worry that Trump is tied with Joe Biden. We haven't hit him with our fusillade of ads yet. Or are you in the camp of, uh-oh, how is this guy still tied or leading us in 5 or 6 key swing states here? What do you make of this? I mean, I'm reading people, you know, like David Axelrod, Gary, is out. He's broken the glass on the alarm about, 2 months ago. And then you have other people from the Obama campaign. Ah, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Oh, they should worry about it. Democrats should worry about it. Yes, he is. He's way ahead of his, you know, competitors in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And we got the Iowa caucus, you know, right around the corner, and he's so far ahead there. And then, as you mentioned, you know, the polls in the swing states. Mm. I'm not one to say that, you know, polls this far out. I can see, you know, polls like in the Des Moines Register for the Iowa caucus, but in a general election, I'm still a little hesitant to say that polls this far out have a great deal of validity. But nevertheless, yeah, I mean, he's jumped substantially ahead of Biden in those polls, too. And so he's not only, you know, rolling really strong within his party, but even in the general election. But again, I'm a little cautious on the general election polls this far out.
And I did see Gary and the guest, of course, one of our regulars, Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University. I did see where there are still people, Gary, in the Republican Party saying, hey, yeah, these national Republican numbers are great for Trump, but let's wait until New Hampshire, Iowa, and South Carolina happen, especially with the Iowa caucuses. Those can be massaged before we anoint him. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, historically there have been late-breaking developments, as you well know, in the Iowa caucus and even in New Hampshire. And so, yeah, there are a number of, well, I can't say a number. There are some analysts who are saying that, well, you don't want to put too much stock in these polls right now. But mm-hmm. I'll tell you, the margins are so great,
yeah.
You know, and so that I mean, what's going to happen between now and those contests? Is Trump going to really, you know, take a huge dive? I'm not so sure about that. But I will say this, that the Iowa caucus is one thing, but the New Hampshire primary is a different type of contest. And,
yeah.
And you know, that's where unaffiliated voters can actually, you know, participate in the primary of their choice. And so that, I think, could you know, throw some type of question mark about, you know, Trump's viability. But nevertheless, even there, he's running very strong.
What do you think of Nikki Haley? Any shot she would take the number two position next to Trump? Mm. I mean, you know, Gary, about 2 years ago, I called it. I was working here, and I said, boy, you know, there's something about Nikki Haley, I think, that's going to register with people. It has. She's doing better. She's still far behind Trump. But, boy, I tell you, she's right out of central casting if the Republicans want to elect the first woman president.
Oh, I know. It's, yeah, she has done so well in the debates, too. And she has really demonstrated her foreign policy credentials. And you know what is interesting? She hasn't really been critical of President Trump, mm-hmm. unlike, you know, Chris Christie and some others. And so even, you know, she could come in second, maybe third or whatever, but she would have to be considered,
yeah.
I would say, you know, as a running mate for Trump should he win this nomination, because she really has everything you need to be a running mate. You know, she balances the ticket in terms of gender. She's from South Carolina, and she was a governor, and she has foreign policy experience. And, you know, she really is absolutely well-liked. And nobody really dislikes, you know, Nikki Haley, because she's a very likable person. And so I think that she would be an ideal running mate. I think she would be a very fine presidential candidate, too. But, you know, if we are talking practical politics here, I think that should Trump be the nominee, then Nikki Haley would have to be on the short list. Although Trump is on record as saying he wouldn't want any of the candidates who are running.
Mm, interesting.
But that's what he said then. But, yeah. You know, we still have a ways to go here. So he could change on that.
I saw, Gary, finally a clip with Claire McCaskill, former Missouri Democratic senator. She's, of course, one of the talking heads on MSNBC. I saw this with her yesterday, and she was, you know, she was in break glass mode for about 90 seconds there, basically saying, hey, RFK Jr. is pulling 8 to 9 to 10% in some of these polls. And you couple that with Cornel West and Jill Stein, who's back in. Should the Dems, Gary, be worried not just about RFK, because the Kennedy name still holds some cachet with old-time liberals, but the fact that you've got all these independents here, which can really screw things up in several states?
Yeah, I think that if of the three individuals you mentioned, if there's a spoiler in the crowd, it's certainly RFK Jr. You know, he's doing exceptionally well, particularly among unaffiliated voters, mm-hmm. and also very young voters, too. And he's kind of a rock star among some of the young voters. And so, you know, it doesn't take much in a swing state for a third party candidate to tip the balance. Mm-hmm. You know, it really doesn't. So.
Yeah.
I think that there's a force to deal with is RFK Jr. There's no doubt in my mind. The question is, you know, who could he hurt the most? Because some of his positions appeal to actually the far right,
yeah.
and also the far left. But I think it's more inclined that he would be hurting Biden's chances, I think. That's my read on it.
What are you hearing from your students, Gary,
yes.
so far? What are they concerned, questions, you know, wondering where's this all going? What are they asking you?
Yeah, well, you know, Paul, I'll tell you, you know, I was putting numbers up on the board the other day with, you know, with RFK mm-hmm. and RFK Jr. and Cornel West and so forth. And actually, it surprised me somewhat. So many of my students actually are leaning towards RFK Jr.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah. Now, we have a pretty strong Republican contingent on campus and in my classes.
Okay.
They will stay with whoever the nominee is.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats are not at all happy. The Democratic students are not at all happy with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But a number of students, even Democratic students, I noticed, are leaning towards RFK Jr. So, you know, that's just one class with 25, 26 students. But it makes me wonder if that's pretty broad out there.
Yeah. Dr. Gary Rose, always great to have you. Sacred Heart University. Gary, be good. We'll talk down the road, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Paul.
Appreciate it. There you go. And we will get back to open phones shortly with you on this Thursday, the 14th of December, 2023. When we do that, in just a bit, it'll be at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. First, though, we welcome one of our
go-to folks on all things international. Dr. Howard Stouffer joins us, University of New Haven professor and instructor of international affairs, national security. Dr. Stouffer has been on the show plenty of times, a distinguished career, 25-year career as a member of the U.S. Foreign Service in the State Department and in areas all around the world. Dr. Stouffer, it's Paul here again. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Dr. Stouffer, before we get to specifics here, give us your macro view. It's been a while since I had you on. I think I had you on right at the outset or shortly after that of the hostilities between Israel and Hamas. So give me your macro view here of what's going on.
Well, I think, the war has been going on. The compact has been going on now for a month and a half. Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, is in Israel right now. He has already met with Yoav Gallant, the defense minister, and Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister. And they both report that this conflict, this war, will continue for several more months because they are determined, the Israelis' leadership is determined, to see that Hamas leadership is destroyed and that the military capabilities of Hamas are eliminated. So this is not going to be a short-term conflict. But at the same time, the rest of the world is putting pressure on Israel to try to agree to a ceasefire. And, of course, Israel is not agreeing to that because unless there's an arrangement where more hostages can be released as Israel releases Palestinians, they're not going to agree to another pause, not a ceasefire. There is word now that, the media has been saying that there is a dispute between Israel and the United States over a post-conflict regime for Gaza. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's where there seems to be some differences of opinion about what's the best way forward.
Is it, Dr. Stouffer, a practical goal to say, admirable, yes, but can it be done to completely eliminate Hamas, they say, just the way that we stopped Nazism in World War II? In the modern world, is that possible or not?
I don't know. I mean, Hamas is also an ideology, and there are people throughout the Middle East that believe in the ideology of Hamas, which is to destroy the Jewish state of Israel, to kill as many Jews as possible, and to bring about that kind of change in the Middle East. And of course, they are all acolytes of Iran, where they have militias in Iraq and in Syria. They have the Houthis in Yemen. They have Hezbollah in Lebanon. And, of course, they got Hamas, fighting in Gaza. So eliminating Hamas won't change the equation. In fact, that's why a lot of Israelis now are very worried because, when the country was formed in 1948, that generation fought for 25 years or more to be able to have some semblance of peace in the region. And now Israelis are feeling this is an existential fight because, they once again face all of these enemies that are coming from them at all different parts where, Iran is funding them and guiding them and providing weapons to them.
What can practically, Dr. Stouffer, be done in your eye here with Gaza? Mm-hmm. 2.5 million people living there. Who knows what percentage of that actually buys into the Hamas ideology? But as you say, once all the shooting is done, probably in a few months, maybe longer, that's when the rubber's going to hit the road here. What do you, in all your years of foreign policy experience dealing with different countries, different regimes, what do you look at as a practical possibility here moving forward, maybe months or a year down the road?
Well, I'm hoping it would be sooner, quite frankly, because it's going to be hard for Israel to sustain having 350,000 soldiers in Gaza and not have their economy in serious trouble. And, the growing of fruits and vegetables and all of the other things that Israel does needs all of its young population to be working. So that's a big issue. But I think that my friend Dan Kurser, who used to be the ambassador both in Egypt and in Israel, came out with an article in The Atlantic that basically talks about establishing some steps to go forward. And I think that's what Jake Sullivan might be talking about. Initially, the first focus will be on trying to create a stable atmosphere in Gaza and to bringing in, Arab quartet leaders from Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, maybe some European allies, maybe some African Union countries, and bring them in to be able to work with the Israelis to keep the area stable. And then the first phase would be to have under UN supervision, together with these Arab Arab countries to have de-escalation and monitoring and accountability for a real armistice. And if the Israelis are satisfied that they got almost all of the Hamas military and Hamas leadership either removed, then I think they can agree to something like that. The second phase would be that you bring in thousands of Palestinian civil servants and police officers who are now working for the Palestinian Authority on the West Bank. They won't come in under an Israeli regime, but they would come in under an Arab regime. And then the next phase would be a stabilization step where civilians will return to rebuilt homes and schools and hospitals and mosques. And finally, the third step would be to create some kind of a interim ruling body that would be a Palestinian body that would be elected.
Yeah.
You know, the Mahmoud Abbas, the leader of the Palestinian Authority, was last elected in 2005 and he hasn't had another election since. And so you need to have serious elections monitored internationally and then bring in real, you know, civil servants and leaders who would be administrative leaders. Israel would still be responsible for the security, the overall security in Gaza, but it would basically be administered by Arabs, by Palestinians, and Palestinians running all of the administrative aspects of life there. That sounds easier said than done, but that basically is an outline of what, you know, if the president agrees that this is what he wants to see done, I'm sure that we can help the Israelis try to implement something like that.
Has this long-term idea, Dr. Stouffer, of normalized relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia, has that now been scuttled short-term or long-term or not?
Well, I think in the short-term, that's not going to happen. But in the long-term, it's in the interest of the Saudis to see stable and peaceful relations in the entire region. And by working as Sunni states with the Egyptians, the Jordanians that are Sunni states and against states that are Shia states like Lebanon and like Iran, it is in their interest to try to work with Israel to see if there can be some kind of stability with the Palestinians. What this whole thing has done and was predicated on was to demonstrate that, the Palestinians were being ignored and they didn't like that. And the West Bankers and the Hamas both agreed that, you know, the plans to establish relations with Saudi Arabia and leave out the Palestinians was not going to fly. Now it's very clear the Palestinians are front and center, and whatever arrangements are going to be made have to include them, have to include what you're going to do in the Gaza Strip, and then ultimately what will Israel do with these other states that they haven't established relations with. But I think that's down the road.
What's the dynamic, Dr. Stouffer, now and in the future with Hezbollah and Lebanon, do you think?
I think Hezbollah has been given a very clear message, and one of the reasons why the Israelis want to go for an all-out, win is to be able to demonstrate to Hezbollah, see what's happening in Gaza. That could be happening again as it was in 2006 when we went to war with you, Hezbollah, and most of southern Lebanon was destroyed. Most of Beirut was destroyed. And the same would be true if, eventually if the Iranians want to go to war with Israel, they'll face the United States and possibly the British and the French and others, and they would face that kind of level of destruction as well. So the message out there is, don't engage, don't get involved, and we're going to finish this process, and those that attack us the way Hamas did will face this kind of utter destruction.
And Dr. Stouffer, if I could get one quick question here in the time we have remaining regarding Ukraine and Russia. I'm starting to read and see more people saying, well, this thing is only going to really end if two things happen. Ukraine gives Putin some land, but yet the U.S. and the EU and NATO arm Ukraine in exchange for that to the teeth and telling Putin, okay, you got your pound of flesh, now stop. What do you think of that whole thing?
I hate the idea that a country in the year 2022 and 2023 could acquire land by just simply invading another country. We don't want to, allow that kind of international order to emerge. I don't know if that will be the ultimate outcome, but I do believe that, when a country does what Russia has been doing against Ukraine, we need to keep sustaining them because we need to demonstrate that our word means something.
Mm-hmm.
And when we give our commitment, that means something in the world too. And if you're Moldova as well as Ukraine now, you're going to be quite worried that if the United States backs away, you're going to soon see Russian troops coming in there. And even the Poles and the Baltic states – and others. Putin has already said, only in Russian, but he's already said to his public when he broadcasts, you know, we want to reestablish the regime of Catherine the Great, which included almost all of Western Europe.
Yeah.
So that's the problem.
Dr. Stouffer, thank you. Always great to chat with you, and we'll chat down the road, sir. Be good. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye-bye. Dr. Howard Stouffer there, University of New Haven, 25 years in the Foreign Service there.